All right, so when we last left David HaMelech, he had just killed and decapitated Goliath, HaPlishti, Goliath, on the battlefield, to the astonishment and amazement of all the people, his family, and of course to Shaul HaMelech. And David became an immediate celebrity. He had previously, as we learned, been welcomed into the palace of Shaul HaMelech, and he had played the harp for Shaul to help Shaul overcome his despondency, but now he became even more of a celebrity, as the Navi notes in number 2. So 2 immediately follows the return from the battlefield, and the Navi says, Vayehi bevoam, Bishuv David Me'akosis HaPlishti, when David returned from smiting the Plishti, Batetsena Hanashim Mikol Arei Yisrael Lashir V'Hamichalos L'Kras Shaul HaMelech. All the women from the towns of Israel came out. I mean, they do the same thing today, a victory parade. They came out to sing with the timbrels to greet Shaul HaMelech, and they saw as well David, the war hero. And the women rejoicing called out, and this was the refrain of their song. Apparently it was a longer ode, paean of praise to Shaul and David, but the refrain repeated again and again was Hikas Shaul Balafov V'David Berivivasov, that Shaul slays by the thousands, but David by the tens of thousands, meaning Shaul couldn't defeat Goliath. David did, and Shaul already was very sensitive to David, sensitive in fact to his monarchy being stripped from him by Shaul, by Shmuel, Hanavi, after the debacle with Amalek. So now Shaul starts looking at David a little differently. Shaul became very angry, and he was very disturbed by this chant. You can't ever link a king with another person. The king resents it. They gave David tens of thousands that he's killed, and me only thousands. So the only thing lacking to David is the kingship. So now he suspected that David was the one who had been chosen to replace him. As we learned last year, in fact, David had already been anointed by Shmuel HaNavi, but it was unknown to the people, unknown really to others outside the family of David himself. Shaul then eyed David. Oyein really is a phrase we use today to eyeball someone. He kept his eye on him because he was already suspicious. Now, that refrain, Hikas Shaul Balafov V'David Berivosov, really intensified Shaul's jealousy and his psychological torment, which would escalate even more. That jealousy would soon become paranoid hatred, which is really the subject of our discussions next week. But for tonight, I want to pick up the area right now where the Navi does, and the relationship of David and Yehonasan, the son of Shaul. Vayehi chalosu ledaber el Shaul. It's the beginning of Perek Yud Ches. It's number one in the handout. B'nefesh Yehonasan nikshira b'nefesh David. The soul of Yehonasan became bonded with the soul of David HaMelech. Vayehovehu. So the Kri is Vayehovehu. The Ksiv is Vayehovo. Vayehovehu means they loved each other. So it wasn't unilateral. It was mutual. Vayehovehu Yonasan kinafsho. Yonasan loved David like his soul. Vaikacheu Shaul Bayomahu Velonasana Loshubesaviv. Shaul then kept David in the palace. We'll see next week the first thing he tried to do was marry off David to one of his own daughters. So David he'd be able to keep a close watch on. But be that as it may, Vaikros Yonason Vidavid Bris. Yonason and David made a covenant, Bavaso Sokinafsho, in their mutual love for each other. Vayispashet Yehonasan es ha-me'il asher alov vayitnelu David. Yehonasan removed his robe, his royal robe. He gave it to David. Umadov, his uniform, bat charbo, bat kashto, bat chagoro. His sword, his bow, his belt. Meaning he gave David his regal garb as well as his armor, signifying, we'll discuss it further, but signifying as far as Yehonasan is concerned, David is the natural king, and not Yehonasan who should be the successor to his father. And in fact, David, the next pasuk says, David's popularity grew and grew amongst the people. There's several ways that Navi refers to the love of David and Yehonasan. First, Nikshara b'nafsho, their souls were bonded. The word ahava is used, love. The word bris is used, covenant. If you look at number 4 in the elegy of David for Yehonasan after Yehonasan and Shaul killed in battle, so he says, it's the beginning of Shmuel Bez, Ech naflu giborim misocha milchama. How did the mighty fall in the midst of the battle? Yehonasan, Sarli olecha achi Yehonasan. I grieve for you, my brother Yehonasan. Na'amta li ma'od, you are most pleasant to me. Your love is more precious to me than even the love of woman, love of women. Ech naflu giborim ve'abdu klei milchama. How did these heroes fall, Shaul and Yonasan, and these instruments of battle, these weapons destroyed? So that phrase, of course, to us, is probably the most far-reaching of all the terms used to describe their relationship. Nifla'ata avascholi me'avas nashim, David says. Your love, my love, your love of me, our mutual love, is greater, more precious to me than even the love of women. Now, this statement, of course, if you follow the literature the last few years, has become somewhat controversial in Israel, mainly among the ignoramus sect, who look at this pasuk really in line with their own tawdry, vulgar view of society, as a reference to an illicit love that Dov and Yehonasan might have had, chas v'chalila. So, of course, it comes from the mouths of people who not only don't understand Torah at all, or Tanakh. I remember the most recent one was 3-4 years ago, was Yael Dayan, Moshe's daughter. But they don't understand love or friendship. They don't really understand what love of soul means either. Nafsho nikshira b'nefesh. They just don't understand the concept. It's not part of their vocabulary or their worldview. And so they understand this in accordance with their own perverse, corrupt categories. But of course, it's not so. It would make no sense that Torah would glamorize such a thing. But yet, we have to understand why such language is used. And it has a very deep and far-reaching meaning, which I think, in a sense, gives us a reflection, a true reflection, of what friendship is. And in fact, what love is of all types. So you have those 4 references to love, and one that Chazal add in the Mishnah in Avos, I cited in number 7. In Perek Hey Mishnah Tezayin and Avos Kol Avo Sheet Fluyabidavar Batel Davar Batela Avo. Any love which is dependent on something, on some external condition, so if that something is taken away, the love itself will be taken away. But Visheinot Fluyabidavar, if it's independent, unconditional, then Eino Batela Le'olam, it'll never be nullified. Which is the dependent love? That's Avas Amnon v'Tamar, a story we'll discuss perhaps later in the year, that Amnon is drawn irresistibly to his half-sister Tamar and eventually rapes her. But the entire love is dependent on a physical obsession that he had with her, once the obsession was removed, meaning he lived with her already, then not only was the love gone, but it became a passionate hatred. That's tuliya bedavar. But v'sheino tuliya bedavar, a love which is not dependent on anything, zo avas David v'Yehonasan. This is the love of David HaMelech and Yehonasan ben Shaul. So it's not tuliya bedavar. We have to understand that Mishnah as well. So what happened here? How did this relationship come about? And what did it mean for the both of them? Now the Radak in number 6, which is on the first pasuk, says v'nefesh Yehonasan, the soul of Yehonasan, yikshiro b'nefesh David. The Radak makes a very interesting point from the Masorah. Min reish sifra ad hocho Yehonasan. From the beginning of Shmuel, from the first time Yehonasan is mentioned, until now, he's always called Yehonasan, without the hey. That question that we're always asked. I've been asked a few times by someone who wanted to name a child Jonathan. Is the name Yehonasan, or is the name Yehonasan, or Yonatan, or Yehonatan? So you see, this fellow was called both. From the beginning of the Novi until now, he was called Yehonasan, except for two times. The two times when he went as an individual to fight the battles of Israel. There he's called Yehonasan because he's operating as God's messenger, and he has the brachos of Hashem. So he's called Yonatan. But now, min hachad sof sifra, Yehonasan. From now until the end of his life, he's always called Yehonasan. The hey is added to his name. So the question, of course, is why? What's the difference? So we'll try to understand all this, as well as one other point. The haftarah from this past Shabbos, which was Machar Chodesh, what exactly was that story, which is really emblematic of the love between Yehonasan and David? So let's understand the uniqueness of the love that existed. If you look at number 3, it's the Medrash in Shir HaShirim Rabo, Parsha Ches, the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Ki Azoch HaMoves Ava, because death is as love is as strong as death. What love is that? Ava Shahav Yehonasan LeDavid. That's the love that Yehonasan loved David. Shenemar v'yehoveu Yehonasan kinavsho. He loved him like his own soul. Literally, v'haftal recha kamocha. He loved him, David as he loved himself. So that's azoch hamoves ahava. Koshoch hishol kino. Jealousy is as difficult as the pit, the grave. That's kino shekinei sha'ul David. The jealousy that Shaul directed at David, Shenemar Vahi Shaul Oyenes David. So you have both phrases in the pasuk really bracketing our story. One is the powerful love, the intense love that existed between David and Yehonasan, Shaul's son, and the other was the very intense jealousy that was directed by Shaul at David. Why is it? Why is love as strong as death? It seemed to be opposite categories. So the Mishpatzot Zov, we'll quote a few times tonight, comments as follows. That death is the most powerful, unstoppable force of perud, of separation, that exists in our world. Death separates. You're cut off from that individual. Love is the exact counterforce of death. Because what love is the most powerful, unstoppable force of chibur, of connection, that exists in our world. So as strong as death is in separating people, that's how powerful love is in bringing people together. Ki azoch hamoves ahavo, koshoch chishol kino. Jealousy is as difficult as the pit. Now Sheol is a little different than a grave. A grave is a kever. Sheol, Yaakov even used that phrase that his nefesh will go down Sheola mourning the loss of Yosef. Sheol has the sense of a chasm, of an endless pit that a person keeps falling and falling. And so that's what jealousy is. Jealousy really is an endless, bottomless pit in which there's no escape. If a person is jealous of someone else, then nothing will assuage that jealousy, I guess, unless the target somehow fails and he loses whatever the object of the jealousy was. but he'll be jealous of success, jealous of failure, recovery. Just it's a feeling that cannot be easily overcome. So that's Sha'ul, and we'll see for Sha'ul, it really was a death knell. Just took over his life and destroyed it. But again, that's next week. For now, Azocha Mavesavo. The love that David and Yonason had was a love that was as strong as death. So what kind of love is that? Let's see the first phrase. Nikshira Nefesh Yonason, Nikshira Benefesh David. The soul of Yonason was bound, attached to David's soul. Really what we call today soulmates, which we look at in terms of a marriage, but it's not always so. But they were soulmates. The Torah uses this phrase also in relation to Yaakov and Binyamin. When Yehuda makes his plea to Yosef to free Binyamin, so Yaakov says, it's the end of the first Aliyah, V'nafshok shura v'nafsho, that one soul is bound up in another soul, meaning either cannot exist without the other. That really was David and Yonason. Now why was that? Let's see first the Abarbanel. Abarbanel writes in number 8, V'siper ha-kosuv shimayel shol ba'osa chakira hine Yonason lo chakar klal. Shol was investigating David to see whether in fact he was this threat. Yonason didn't do that at all. Yonason evaluated David on an objective basis, and this is what he saw. Nafsho nikshira benefesh David vayavel kinafsho ratzolomar shel hoysav asok avas haneorin. The love of David and Yonason was not like the love of young people, a very like an infatuation, wasn't that? Velo avas hamoil, nor was it a love of a mutual benefit, a utilitarian love, that each one has something they can contribute to the other, they'll benefit the other. So we each do something for one another, and that's a friendship. By the way, it's a very common type of friendship today, that people feel they each provide a benefit to another, whether it's a companionship or physical support, financial support, friendship, but it's utilitarian in that sense. Once the benefit will stop, let's say the person no longer has the time to invest, to speak on the phone, or to go out, or whatever it is, then often the friendship will wither away, because that time, the element which bonded them together does not exist. This was not their friendship. It wasn't avas hamoel, a utilitarian friendship. Kiyam avas hatov, b'mashehu tov, Abarbanel says. It was the love of the good that is good, the love of the good that one sees in another soul. That's what it was. Ulefi shava zos tityaches l'shlemus ha-nafshi, because this love relates directly to perfection of the soul, that's why it's called nefesh kshura v'yerveu kinafsho, meaning it's a love that seeks out the perfection of being that exists in another person and appreciates it. You see a good quality in someone and you're drawn to that quality because that quality enhances your own life and makes you a better person. Now that quality can be something which reinforces what you have, or that quality can be something which challenges you in a way that you perceive as positive. Whatever it is, it's something that you see in the other person and are drawn to it because you know that is the tov, the ava mitis, the absolute good HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to pursue. Rotze lomar, shahav Yonason es David kefi milas nafsho shel David. O shahavo kemo shoy oev Yonason es nafsho atzmo. Yonason loved David because he saw a unique spiritual trait that David had that enhanced Yonason's own appreciation of the good, or made Yonason, enabled him to elicit part of his own character and potential that he otherwise might not have. V'chasav Seneca Hamedini, that's the Roman philosopher, political philosopher Seneca, who lived during the time of the first, right before the first Churban. Shohev Amiti Hu Etzem Ha'adam, the true love is the essence of man, meaning a person. The Rambam writes this, doesn't quote Seneca, he quotes an anonymous philosopher, But in the Perusha Mishnayis Davos, the Rambam says that's the Ohev Amiti, that it's Etzem Adam. Like the Rambam's language is that the Ohev is who? He himself is the true love. That is to say, a person who is able to befriend another, it's because he's a friend to himself. That is to say, he appreciates the good, and when he sees that good in someone else, he responds to it in a very open and embracing way, because he wants to just add to the quantity of good that exists in the world. He wants to develop that quality. So Seneca said, Ho'ev amiti hu etzem adam. I don't think he said in Hebrew, by the way, but what he means to say, the true love or the true lover is the essence of man himself. Meaning a person who is able to be, and that's true even today, the best friend is the person who has a good sense of self. One who has a poor sense of self, it can't be a friend. He could be a leech, he could be a source of a comfort to others, he could be a project for someone else, but he can't be an Ohev Amiti. The Ohev Amiti has to understand what human potential is. V'hu atzmo maskim l'mashenemar b'yehonosan v'yevev k'navsho. So Barbanel is so bold as to say that Seneca would agree his definition of friendship and love is exactly what the Novi describes Yonasan and David as having. Avas HaNefesh. Avas HaNefesh is distinct from physical love as East is from West. That type of love is really Avas HaNe'orim. That's an infatuation, or that's a romantic love, or that's a utilitarian love. You pleasure me, I pleasure you. That's not the Ava that we're talking about here, because that is not a selfless love. That's more of a selfish love. We'll discuss soon. Let's understand now the mission of us. So, Barbanel's point, which will be reiterated by some of the Rishonim, is that the Ava that exists here is the love of perfection that's found in another soul. The Rambam in number 9, which is the top left, explains the mission of us as follows. What's Ava should the unconditional love that can never be nullified. So he says, we know that if there's a material, a physical reason to love someone, then when that material, physical reason is gone, then they're not loved anymore. Alright? You marry someone for money, so when the money is gone, is lost, then the cause of the love is also lost. Rabbi Wein always tells a story about a person became wealthy and was invited to join the board of an art museum, and he was posking and became very well known, saying this painting is good, this is not good, and then he lost his money and they kicked him off the board, and he said, I may have lost my money, I didn't lose my taste in art. No, he lost his taste in art once he lost his taste in money. That's tluya bedavar, that's gashmi, something which is physical, material, once it's lost, so it's gone. But when Siba So'avo Inyan Eloki Vua Mada Amiti, the Rambam says, when the cause of the love is a divine reason, Mada Amiti means absolute knowledge, then Havahi Iefsha Shetovar La'olam. That love can never be destroyed. Mipnesha Siba So Masmedes Amitzius, because that love comes from the from reality that's objectively based. What the Rambam means to say is that when love is connected to a person's appreciation of knowledge, when especially ideas of God, ideas of Torah, are the foundation of that love, then it can never be lost. He means we don't view good or evil, nor do we view friends or enemies through our emotional biases. We're drawn to someone's personality. We're not drawn to someone's personality. We can be drawn to someone's personality even though he's not a tzaddik. And we could not be drawn to someone's personality even though he is a tzaddik. That is wrong. That's not the way the Torah Jew looks at the world. We have one standard. That's what the Rambam calls Mada Amiti. Absolute knowledge, objective criteria, eternal criteria. When we evaluate someone based on eternal criteria, the ideas of Torah, then that type of love, that relationship can never be abolished, because those terms are unchanging. I heard from Rabbi Chait once that that's what Chazal mean in a very, very beautiful expression that Sadikim afil b'misosu nikram chayim. The righteous, even when they're dead, they're called alive. Why? Because the righteous, their lives always partake of eternal ideas. That's the definition of being a tzaddik. Whether or not they're still physically in existence. But the Rasha, the wicked person, is called dead even while he's still alive, because their lives always partake of the temporal. The Rambam says, David and Yehonasan loved each other because each of them partook of the eternal ideas of Torah. And thus, Heina B'Tel El Olam. That can never be taken away. They found, so literally, their souls, the part of them which appreciates knowledge and virtue and strives to serve God, that's the bond that they found. If two people connect on that level, so it's not going to be taken away. It can't be removed, because that type of relationship is permanent. Rabbeinu Yonah, in number 10, explains it along lines similar to what Abarbanel would adopt. The Rabbeinu Yonah says, if anyone could read this, please be my guest. I magnify this more than double. Still small. I have a small gemara in the office. Rabbeinu Yonah says, "Ha'ava she'ein lo hefsek." The ava which is not dependent is one which has no end. There can't be an end to it. Afal pi she'yishar ha'adam she'agil lo ktsas hezek v'kalon. Even though a person estimates that he may come to some harm, some embarrassment as a result of this. Dugmas David v'Yonasan. The example is David and Yehonasan. So we, of course, are focusing on their love and the parameters of their love and the cause of the love. But we shouldn't forget one of the most important points that really draws the two of them together. Yehonasan, in embracing David as his soulmate, is essentially renouncing his claim to the throne. This, of course, will further aggrieve his father. But imagine, Yehonasan is the heir to the throne of Israel. He's to be Melech Yisrael. But he sees in David characteristics that make David a much more worthy king. So therefore, Yehonasan decides on his own, essentially, to abandon his claim to the monarchy. That's the intent of the pasuk. Vayispashet Yehonasan es ha-me'il. He takes off his royal garb. He takes off his royal armor and gives it of his own volition to David. That's amazing that a person should do that. That speaks to a perfection of character in Yehonasan that is so rare, almost to be non-existent. Imagine, by way of ludicrous analogy, you have a number of Democrats running across the country debating each other. There are 9, there are 12, however many they are. Some, of course, are frivolous candidates, others are more serious. But imagine, let's say there are, I don't know, 6 or 7 serious candidates. You imagine at the end of one debate, the other candidates, like 5 or 6, say, you know what? I think this guy clearly is the best candidate. They all say, I'm going to renounce my rights to run, because from what I've heard tonight, this guy is a better candidate than me, than anyone here. How likely is that? It's not even likely after the convention. How likely is that now? So that's Yehonasan. Imagine having that strength of character to say that I don't want it. What did Yehonasan see? So Yehonasan obviously had to be a very humble person. One thing that he saw in the pasuk that precedes immediately, the pasuk with which we started, Vayomer Elof Shaul, David returns to the palace with Shaul, and Shaul says, Ben mi ato hanar? Who are you? What is your name? Vayomer David, David says, Ben avdecha Yishai, beis halachmi. I am the son of Yishai from Beit Lechem. David doesn't even give his own name. That's how self-effacing he was. What Yehonasan sees in David is a kindred spirit. He only mentions his father. He doesn't mention himself. He doesn't claim any of the credit for killing Goliath. He attributes everything to the might of God. Yehonasan really sees a trait in David that he himself had and that he acts upon, as the Gemara notes in Bamitziah at the bottom of Pei Dalet Amud Beis, beginning Pei Hei Amud Aleph, number 12. V'hainu da'amar Rebbe, shlosha anvisonenheim. There are three people who can be construed as humble people. The Elohein, one is Abba, he says his father, Rebbe's father, Rav Gamliel. Ubnei Besera, so they, because they renounce the nesius, the presidency of Klal Yisrael, in favor of Hillel HaBavli, the Yonasan ben Shaul. And Yonasan, Shaul's son, to Kamar Leila David, because he said to David, V'atotim locha Yisrael, V'ani Eyeh L'chol Mishneh, you'll rule. I'm the heir to the throne, but it's much better that you rule and I will assist you. That's tremendous strength of character. With Yerushalmi, points out as well, number 13, Shlosha, on the left side, Yerushalmi Maseches Pesachim, the sixth parak, Shlosha Inichu Kisran Ba'olam Hazeh V'yarshu Chayel Mapah. Three people gave up their crowns in this world and they inherit the world to come. One of them is Yonasan. The other two, Elazar ben Azariah, did a similar thing. When he was appointed the Nasi, the day they deposed Rabbi Gamliel, and then he voluntarily partially stepped down. The story of the Gemara Brachos, Daf Chav Zayin, Chavav, he partially stepped down to allow Rabbi Gamliel to regain his kavod. And of course the B'nai B'seir as well. So that, I mean, it's almost an unbelievable thing that a person should abdicate in favor of someone else, not because of an external reason. This is not, you know, King Edward VII. Not for an external reason, but simply because the person feels, you know what, this person is better than me. He deserves the job more. He's more worthy than me. That is not something that you find very often in life. Yehonasan had that trait, and he saw that trait in David as well, and so they were drawn together. So the question is, why isn't Moshe Rabbeinu mentioned as one of the three anvisonin? So the answer is, Moshe never renounced his kingship. Moshe may have not wanted to become the king originally, but he was never in a position where he renounced in favor of someone else. But these three were actually in a position where they were the leaders of Israel, potential leaders of Israel, and they said, I'm stepping down in favor of someone who's greater than me. Once you have the position, it's very difficult to give it up. No matter what the position is. Be rabbi, chazan, could be CEO, whatever it is, committee chair, makes no difference. It's very hard to give it up, especially to say I'm giving up because he's much better than me. No, that's not the norm. So what was the love? Let's understand now. So already we discussed Nefesh Kshura, and we discussed Ava in terms of She'ena Tuli B'davar. And again, I just reference, as we've done a number of times, Rav Desto said, famous Chazal, that the root of Ava is Hav, to give. The giving, selfless personality is the one who's able to love. So that was what they had as well. They each gave to each other. They saw the most desirable traits in each other, and that's what drew them together. Something else, which is the statement we mentioned before in David's lament of Yehonasan, Niflasav Ascholi Me'avas Nashim, in number 4, that your love is more dear to me than the love of women. So what exactly does that mean? The Metzudas David, in number 5, explains it as follows. Ha'ava Shavticho Hi'ava Nifla. The love that I had for him was a wondrous love. V'hi yoser me'avas hanashim. It's more than the love of women. Asher hema ne'avos ava rabo l'mi shechoshek aleihem. That women are love. Romantic love is a love of people, or a woman is drawn to a man and vice versa. L'mi shechoshek aleihem. When there's a cheshek, when there's physical desire. It's very difficult to separate romantic love, love of women, from physical love, in which if there's consummation, there's pleasure that's being given to both. Physical pleasure, meaning an immediate sense of gratification. Here David says, this is a love which transcends that. Because love of women involves the physical, so therefore it has to be at least partly utilitarian. There's no other way to look at it. It's not necessarily a selfless love, because you gain something from it as well. Unfortunately, sometimes romantic love is a selfish love, because you gain from your lover as your lover gains from you. If it were not so, if it was truly an altruistic, selfless love, so I noted last year in the different shir that if it really was an altruistic love, then people who are philosophers and honest and objective with themselves would, if the situation arose, turn to their spouses someday and say, you know what? I love you. I make you happy, but I know someone who would make you even happier. And therefore, I'm going to step aside for your happiness, so you should be even happier. Well, that doesn't really happen, not even in the movies. Because as selfless as the love might be, there is a utilitarian aspect to it, that we each benefit from it. And therefore, you can't say that it's purely altruistic love. What David said here is not like the Leitzone Hador is saying. It's a profound concept. That here he's drawn to Yonason because of Yonason's perfection of character, and vice versa as well, more than the type of love which results in some physical gratification. Because that type of love is an inferior type of love. It's not necessarily a bonding of the souls. It could be as well, but it's not necessarily. There's always a utilitarian, a pleasurable aspect associated with it. That's not this love. Now the Ramami Fano, Fano is a port town on the eastern Italian coast, where Menachem Azaria Fano was a very interesting, wealthy businessman in the 16th century, wrote numerous svarim. He has a beautiful pshat here, because the Chazal say, Niflato avos cholim avas noshim, I didn't copy it. Your love is more dear to me than the love of women. So one shot in the Medrash is from the more than the love of two women, Avigail and Michal, two of the wives of David HaMelech, to me was especially drawn. That's one shot. But the Ramami Fanu quotes another Medrash. It says very beautifully that your love is greater to me than the love of two women. Which two women? Rachel and Leah. Alright? Why? Because they did a similar thing. Rachel did a similar thing to what Yehonasan did. Because Rachel renounced her rights to Yaakov Avinu and said to Leah, gave her the simanim, said to Leah, you marry him instead of me. But this is yoter me'avas nashim, more, because Rachel just suspended her rights temporarily. She married Yaakov a week later. So she said to Leah, you have him first and I'll have him in a week. So as noble as that is, as selfless as that is, there was a limited time span to it. Not so Yehonasan, who when he renounced the throne, he was renouncing it forever. So David saw Yehonasan's love for him. And it was a love, by the way, which manifested time and again how Yehonasan risked his own life and his father's wrath in order to protect David. So in fact, what Yehonasan did was forever. And that's why it's Yoser Me'avas Nashim. David enhanced Yehonasan. When they met, and Yehonasan's soul became more perfected by the qualities he saw in David, so he became a different person. And that's what the Radak means in 6, when the Radak says, until now, for the most part, he was called Yonasan, Yonatan, without the hay. Now, from now on, till the end of his life, he's called Yehonasan, because David's friendship, David's association with him, so ennobled Yehonasan that he became really a more spiritual being, a greater creature of God. That's a rare type of friendship. And the Rambam says, again in Avos, that that's the type of friendship, it says, Kenei l'chachaver, that's the mission, the first parak. That's the type of friendship a friend, a person really should go out and acquire, even buy with money if necessary. the person who enhances the soul, who elevates him in terms of his obligations, his relationship with Hashem, a person who relates to him in a core, essential way, such that one of the letters of God's name is added to his name, Stehiven. That would be an amazing thing, all right? That's something that's very hard for us to imagine. But see, Yonasan took on an entirely different complexion, spiritual complexion, as a result of this relationship with David HaMelech. It was an added dimension to his life, made more godly, hence Yehonasan. Rabbeinu Yonah says that that was the type of love, that's Eina Tluya B'davar, that even though he had to renounce the melucha, their bond was so strong, so intense. And that's what David refers to. He quotes the pasuk in Shmuel Beis that the love was greater than avas nashim, because the avas nashim, like we mentioned before, so that's utilitarian, at least on some level. But here he was completely self-effacing. Said, "I'll be the Mishnah. You be the king." Not only, you see the difference between father and son. Not only was Yehonasan not driven to madness by jealousy over the rival to the throne, who was his contemporary, on the contrary, Yehonasan reached out and did whatever he could to make sure that David would be the king. That is a tremendous character. So Rabbeinu Yonah is saying, in fact, what was the love of David and Yehonasan? It really was a love of personality, an appreciation for the personality of the other that far exceeds romantic love. But there's no doubt that in the ideal case, even in a situation of romantic love, you can have an appreciation of the other's personality as well. They're not necessarily mutually exclusive, shouldn't be. But they don't have to necessarily be an identical concept. But that was the love here, just an appreciation of another human being. And when one finds that, when they found each other, then they were able to do things that otherwise they could not do. This culminated in a number of brisos, covenants, that they enacted between them. A covenant that for Yehonasan transcended even his love for his father. And as the Mishpat HaZov notes in 11, in the second paragraph, really exacerbated his father's jealousy and his paranoia. It could be Efshe Levash Ayadesh Yehonasan Ohev is David Lamrosha Bazeh Yafsev Samaluch LaAtzmo. Even though Yehonasan loved David, notwithstanding, it would cost Yehonasan the crown. Bazeh Rosho LaSaosam Iti Al Hayos David Melcham Yud Meis Hashem. Shol saw in this the final painful verification that David really would replace him and would be the king. And so the first paragraph quotes the Torah Tamima that in fact it was Yehonasan's love for David which really sent Shol over the edge. That Shol was jealous and paranoid anyway, but he became uncontrollable when he saw his own son drawn into David's orbit and supporting him. That's the pasuk. Ki azoch hamoves ava kashoch Shol kino. What made the kina of Shol intolerable, in fact deadly in the end, was the love that David and Yehonasan had for each other. In essence, Yehonasan was working to fulfill Shol's worst nightmare with which he lived, which was the loss of his kingdom, that which Shmuel HaNavi had prophesied to him after Amalek, that you're stripped of your melucha, and God is going to give it to someone, your friend who's better than you. That's what he lived with. They enacted a number of brisos, covenants, one we'll discuss right now. A covenant is not just between the two of them, but it's between their posterity as well. Meaning, committing themselves and their offspring to these ideas. And they both each time invoke God's name. Meaning a commitment to eternal concepts of Torah, which is the grounds of the covenant between them. So what happens now? Let's turn the page, and we enter the world, which we touched on briefly this past Shabbos. So Torah, the Navi says first in number 14, which is Perek Chaf, the beginning of Perek Chaf in Shmuel Aleph. Stories that we'll get to. David had first fled the palace, then he was brought back, Shaul made up, and then in the palace again, they're eating a meal one day, and Shaul just sort of nonchalantly took out his spear and fired it at David, and David ducked and it hit the wall, and they took the spear back, and again he tried, he threw the spear at him, and again he missed, and with that David saw that it wasn't an accidental toss. So he left the palace again, ran first to Ramah where Shmuel was, and ran to Nayot. So that we'll discuss next time. But here he comes back. He comes by Yevrach David min Nayot by Ramah, by Avoh by Yomer lefnei Yehonasan. He says to Yehonasan, his soulmate, because now he's already felt not only the wrath, but the murderous rage of Shaul. Me'asisi, I don't know, well, what I do? Me'avoni, what is my iniquity? Mechatasi lefnei avicha, what is my sin before your father? Ki mevakeshes nafshi, wants to kill me. Vayomer, Yonasan says, lo chalilo lo samus, you're not going to die. See, at this point, Yonasan refused to believe that his father really wanted to kill him. Hinei lo yasa vi davar gadol o davar katon v'lo yigles ozni. My father won't do anything, great or small, without telling me first. Why would my father hide this from me if he really wanted to kill you? They swore, saying, your father knows I have found favor in your eyes. He knows of this relationship. So he said, he may have said to himself, Shaul, don't let Yonasan know. Yonasan is friendly with David, so I don't want him to know. I'll kill him, he won't know about it. V'ulam chay Hashem v'chay nafshecho ki kefesa b'ini u'vein ha-moves. But by the life of God, by your life, there's just, your pesa means like psio. There's just a footstep between me and death. Meaning Shaul already tried the spear trick twice, and he just got away with it. V'yomer Yonasan al David, ma tamar nafshecho v'esela. What should I do? Yonasan says, what should I do to preserve your life? And I'll do it. So David now hatches a plan. David says, tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh. You'll tell your father, I went to Beit Lechem to celebrate Rosh Chodesh with my family. And you'll see by your father's reaction. Is he upset or is he hysterically angry? You'll see whether it's just a mood that he goes through occasionally, a homicidal rage, which comes and goes. For David's sake, you hope it goes, doesn't come. Or is it something which is real, which is not just momentary, but something which is now at the core of his being. So David suggests he run into the field. That was his request. Yehonasan modifies that, which in fact is the beginning of the Haftarah, which is number 15 here. Vayomer, this is Haftarah from Machach Chodesh. We read this past Shabbos. Vayomer lo Yehonasan Machach Chodesh. Yehonasan, tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh, and you'll be missed at the table when we have the Sudas Rosh Chodesh. So this is the plan that we'll have. Vishilashto, Tered Ma'od. So for 3 days, you'll remain far down. The day of the incident, you'll come to the place where you hid, which is right next to Evan Ozel, a stone mark, like a landmark on a highway that people know, and there you'll hide. I will then shoot 3 arrows in that direction, as if I'm shooting at a target. I will then send the lad and say, Lech mitzas achitzim, go find the arrows. This is the signal now. Imamor omar lanar, if I say to the lad, Hine achitzim mimcho vohena, the arrows are between me and you, meaning you have to come back and get them, then it means, Kochena vovo ki shalom lucho, vein dovar chayashem. If the arrows are between me and the boy, then it means don't go for it, you can come back, because all is well. V'im ko amar lo elem, but if I say to the young man, behold, the arrows are beyond you, then you should then you have to go because it's dangerous. So what kind of signal is this? What exactly? Why don't they just tell him? Why does he have to use the old arrow communication device? And he just, if you know the signal, tell him. So of course, there's a reason for all this. Practically, David and Yonason cannot appear in public. So the whole signal was designed to avoid a situation where they could not communicate. Or better, since it was a public place, even though it turned out no one else was there, they did not have to speak in order to convey these ideas. But of course, there's a deeper reason for it as well. And the signal that they used involved tremendous chokmah. Note, the Barbanel says it was David's idea to hide in the field, but it was Yehonasan's idea to use the test of the arrows. So what's the test? Rashi says, interestingly enough, in 16, Sida ore, that I'll shoot the arrow, and that will precipitate the test. Rashi says he'll shoot a bitzad osa even orechit simu matara on a certain side of that landmark. Kadesh leven anar, so the lad won't understand. Vizes simon yel cholinacheh shimatotzerich levroch, and you'll have to divine when I shoot the arrow whether or not it means that it's safe or unsafe. Rashi seems to hold that what would be the determinant was where the arrows went. Not that the arrows were a signal that were being sent, but that would divine it, almost like the Garl Hagro, that Yehonasan would shoot arrows, and wherever the arrows landed, if they landed before the boy, it would mean it's safe. God would send a message that it's safe. If it was a shot beyond the lad, it would mean it's unsafe. In fact, the Pasuk, as Rashi sees the Pshat, would seem to verify it. Because if it's mimchava hala, then lech kishi lachecha Hashem, means because God has sent you. If you look at 17, the Mishpat Zov, dasa mefarshim eina kashitas Rashi. Most hold that it wasn't a mystical attempt to ascertain God's will, but most of the mefarshim agree it's rak hodas v'havharas ha-matzav shel Yehonasan l'David. It was just a way to clarify the situation, both in terms of whether there was a danger and how prevalent the danger was, how close to fruition was Shaul's homicidal ambitions. The signal was necessary, as he notes, because of a chashash. Maybe they would not be able to meet in the field. And this way they'd have some sign by which they could convey ideas. What was the signs? The Malbim explains it was a twofold sign. It's number 18. The two different phrases are used. One is vohena, here, as opposed to vahala, beyond. And in the first case of hena, it says la nar, to the lad. In the second case, it says lo elem, to the boy. So it's really, it's a double signal. What's the double signal? So that's what the Malbim explains. That heino v'holo will indicate whether or not there is a danger. If there's no danger, so you can come between me and the boy. It's safe to come out. If it's v'holo, then it means that you have to go beyond. You have to flee. But that's the initial signal. There was a secondary signal as well, and that is how close is Shaul to carrying this out? Must you flee now, or is there still time to assuage Shaul, to talk him out of it, etc.? So that was the signal of the Elam and the Nar. Kishem Elam, Malm writes, More Yoser Hagvura Vazrizus Mishem Nar. Elam is a boy, someone who's a little older than a Nar. So it means you have to act with greater alacrity if I say Elam than if I say Nar. It's interesting because Elam is also from the root of Ne'elam, to be hidden, to disappear. So if he uses the word, if he says Va'ala and Elam, then it means not only is there danger, but the danger is immediate. And therefore you have to flee quickly. as opposed if he would say Haina or Na'ar, then it would mean that either there's no danger, or Holovah, now there is a danger, but it's not so pressing. And maybe we'll be able to talk him out of it. So that was the signal. Of course, there are other signals as well that are being sent. As Chazal point out, look at number 20. Umahaya hanisyon bechitzim. What exactly was the trial of the arrows? So it says, possible to explain based on the Gemara Arachin, Ein Chetz El Lashon. What's the greatest arrow that we have? Our tongues, speech. So therefore, the arrows represent the danger that exists in Lashon Hara and speech, which of course is at the heart of the problem, as we'll see in a few weeks, with Doeg HaDomi, who slanders David and winds up killing having Shaul kill the entire city of Nov, the city of Kohanim. So in fact, what the message that Yonason is saying is that in this case, as probably is generally true, speech is dangerous. We know, what's the significance of an arrow? Once you shoot it, can't come back. And words are the same way. Once you say something, Lashon Hara can't come back, can't take it back either. So that's what Doeg, that was a problem with Doeg. It was what was fueling, at least somewhat, the jealousy of Shaul, and therefore it became a very apt metaphor for the signal that Yehonasan and David would convey to each other. So that was the test. Yehonasan, as the Navi continues, as we know from this past Shabbos, goes to his father. His father asks him the first day Rosh Chodesh, where's David? He says, he can't, maybe he's Tomei. Comes back the second day, and he says, where's David? He says, where's Ben Yishai? He didn't come yesterday, he didn't come today. So Yehonasan says that maybe I'll ask, maybe he's in Beis Lechem, maybe he's with his family there. Vayichar Avshol B'Yehonasan, it's number 19. When Yehonasan gives some justification for Shaul, for David's absence, so Shaul explodes. Vayichar Avshol B'Yehonasan, he becomes greatly angry at him. Vayomelo says to him, Ben Navas Hamardus, you are the son of a pervertedly rebellious woman. Why is he blaming the mother? So the pshat is, Shaul held that it had to come from the mother. That what Shaul's, Yonason's mother did not convey to Yonason, apparently, the importance of Malchus Yisrael. So he was really critical of the mother. Of course, Radak says that Yonason's mother, Shaul's wife, was very independent-minded. So therefore, she raised the child, Yehonasan, who was also independent-minded. He didn't follow his father. That's the Radak. But the simple pshat in Navasam Radus is really a reference to Yehonasan, and not to his mother. And now Shaul touches on the heart of the matter. Halo yodati, don't you know, or do I not know, kivocher atol ben Yishai, that you are more worthy, I'm sorry, that you choose Ben Yishai to displace you as monarch, levoshtecho, to your own shame, ulevoshe servasi mecho, and to the shame of your mother. Ki chol hayomim asher ben Yishai chai alo adamo, as long as Ben Yishai refused to say the name of David. And it's interesting, because it reminds me that Ben-Gurion never mentioned the name Menachem Begin in the 15 years in the Knesset together, never said his name. He'd call him Osa Ho'ish, be that as it may. He said, as long as Ben Yishai is alive, he used to call him, in fact, Ha'isha Yishev Litzad Bader, the man sitting next to Yochanan Bader, that's what he would call him. Never mentioned his name. See, here's Shaul, who probably had a similar paranoia to what Ben-Gurion had, doesn't mention David either. Don't you, as long as Ben Yishai is alive, lo sikon ato malchusecho, you and your kingdom will not be established? So that's the very point that Yehonasan renounced, that Shaul could not accept. Because that meant that the prophecy of Shmuel would come true. V'ato shlach v'kacho so'e like even mavasu. Now your obligation, Yonasan, is to go and get David so I can kill him. And Yonasan answers, Loma yumas me'aso. Why should he die? What did he do? So what does Shaul do? Same thing he did to David. Vayotel Shol Sachanis Olov Hakoso. Before the days of gun control, needed spear control, keep them out of the hands of angry people. He reached again for his spear, and he threw the spear. Barbanel says he threw it at Yehonasan, his son, trying to kill him, but Yehonasan escapes and then runs to David. The Griz, I'm going to save it for next week, but I'll tell you now, because the Griz is the Rebbe Soloveitchik. It's a very beautiful pshat. I mean, Shaul's a tzaddik, all right? So what does he mean that as long as Ben Yishai is alive, you can't be the king? He knows that Shmuel wrested the monarchy from him. He knows Shmuel said the monarchy was given to someone else. He knows by now, we assume, that David was the one who's anointed. He sees the hand. He knows Shmuel anointed someone, and now he sees that David is suddenly being elevated over everyone else in the society. He's already living in the palace, so he knows what's happening. So how could he think Shaul's a tzaddik that he could thwart the will of God? So the Griz explained very beautifully, it's only a brisker cat, but the halacha is that a nevuah lirah, a prophecy for evil, can be overturned through tshuva, through repentance. As we see from the story of Nineveh. The Nineveh was told, Arbam Yom v'Nineveh nepaches, another 40 days Nineveh will be overturned. So Yonah felt it means they'll be destroyed, but no, they did tshuva. Overturn meant revolution, spiritual revolution. So nevuah lerah can be overturned. A nevuah letovah can never be nullified. That's God's will. So he said to Yehonasan, this nevuah, the nevuah lerah, that the monarchy should be taken away from me, so that can be overturned through tshuva. But there's a nevuah letovah here as well, which is what? That David should reign. But the only way then we can keep the crown is if David is no longer alive, and therefore the nevuah letovah won't come to pass, and through our tshuva the nevuah lerah will be overturned. Either the nevuah letovah did not take place, so the Griz said it's not true because David was already anointed the king. He may not have served it as the king, but he was already anointed, so everything works out. Nevuah letovah fulfilled. David became the melech. Nice, he was killed, but he was the Melech for a short time after being anointed by Shmuel Hanavi. And the Nevuah lerah nullified because of the tshuva. So that's what he said. Here we have a way to change our situation and do tshuva. And instead, you not only do you let Ben Yishai live, but you encourage him in his fantasies. So Shaul now, at least at this point, turns on Yehonasan as well. What does Yehonasan do? So as we know from Haftorah, he runs out to the field, and he says to his lad, run out. Vayomer halo achetzi mimcho v'holo. The arrow is between, it is beyond you. Meaning, message to David, flee, danger. And then throws caution to the wind, and he says, "Mehera chusha al tamod." Very quickly, run away. Don't stand here. It's not even enough. The danger is so great, he can't even use the signal of Elam that he should disappear quickly. But rather, he yells out, "Mehera chusha al tamod." Don't stand here as well. Quick, hurry. The lad runs off. No one else is there, so David comes out of his hiding place, and they embrace. David bows to Yonasan, he kisses him, they cry, David cried even more, because now he recognized the real godless hanefesh of Yonasan, that it's one thing to renounce the crown, it's something else to turn against your family. Blood is thicker than water, they tell me. So Yonasan, so he has a professional interest in the monarchy, but now he's betraying his own father. At this point, once again, they enact a covenant. Vayomer Yehonasan leDavid, lech l'shalom, go to peace, meaning find peace. Asher nishbanu shneinu anachnu b'shem Hashem lemor. We've sworn in God's name, the two of us. Hashem yeh beini uveinecho. God will be between us. Uvein zari vein zaracho, between our descendants, ad olam, forever. Covenant for life between David and Yehonasan. Yehonasan's feeling at this point is that his feeling that David will be the king is really confirmed now. That's why he did not hesitate at all in helping David. There's something else which we should mention as well, and that it's no coincidence that this is Machar Chodesh. This is Rosh Chodesh, because Yehonasan sees, as we should all see as well, the pattern that develops in Jewish history. When we look like we're about to disappear, just like the moon before Rosh Chodesh disappears as well, that is the that's Dugmas the Levana. We are really a people of the moon, because our existence, in terms of its waxing and waning, parallels the moon as well. Machar Chodesh means the moon has now disappeared, and there's no light for Klal Yisrael, and there seems to be no hope. And that is the pattern. Avram Avinu, this week's Sedra, is almost destroyed by Nimrod. So the nascent Jewish people almost never get off the ground. Yitzchak is almost never born. Avram is 100, Sarah is 90. Avram laughs. Vayitzchak, halaven me'os shana eleh. Can a man of 100 produce a child, a woman of 90? Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim almost disappear. Malchus Beis David is the same way. When it seems that our hopes for our future are going to disappear, Yonasan sees David's going to be the king, unless he's destroyed, unless he's killed. So at the lowest moment, that's the moment of Rosh Chodesh, when again the sun, the moon appears, and we see in fact that Klal Yisrael, Dugmas Halavana, never disappears. And that's why, of course, David HaMelech is featured so prominently in Kiddush Levana. Look at number 21. The Rama says, as we know very well, the text of Kiddush Levana, the psukim we say afterwards, one thing we say three times, David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam. David, the king of Israel, will live forever, because we really like the moon. And Yehonasan saw that same pattern being replicated here. David is near death, because Shaul has the resources of government behind him, and an army that's willing to kill David, because they resent this young shepherd being the one to kill Goliath. And yet David prospers. That's why when we bench Rosh Chodesh and we bless the moon itself when it makes its reappearance, we mention David HaMelech and Machar Chodesh and Rosh Chodesh, Shemalchuso Nimshal Alavano, because his kingdom is comparable to the moon. V'asu Tzchadesh Kemoso, which is the text of the Bracha. Eventually Malchus Beis Dov will be renewed like the moon. U'Knesses Yisrael Tachazol Yisdabek B'Bailo Shokadosh Baruch Hu, and the Jewish people will again cleave to God. Dugmas Halavano HaMishadeshes Imachamo, just like the moon will ultimately cleave to the sun. This is the Ramon Arachayim Tov Chav Vav Sif Bez. That's why we dance, that's what we refer to David HaMelech as well. That's Malchus Beis David. Yehonasan sees here a sign that David is going to be a Melech. He reaffirms the bris, he pledges eternal peace, and really he cements a friendship that is probably the deepest friendship that the Tanakh knows, and for us is a paradigm for what a true friend can be. Exemplified by one thing which struck me before, in the piyut that we say before the Haftarah, on the second day Shavuos, Yitziv Pisgam, what's the last line? Yehonasan Gvar Invisan. Yehonasan is the humble man. He's the epitome of the humble man. So is David. And therefore, it's people of humility whose souls bond, who have the method by which they can connect on the deepest, most profound level. That's a friendship which not only is fulfilling in the personal sense, but as we see in our story here, is the friendship which paves the way for the establishment of Malchus Beis David, and ultimately for Bias Mashiach Zekeinu, Mashiach Ben David, B'mher B'yameinu Amen. Okay, next week we'll discuss Shaul HaMelech and David, his jealousy, the hunter and the hunted. Stay tuned.